Now, back to the pandemic, whether you charged out there like a soldier going into battle or took cautious steps like a newborn colt, parts of the economy are open this week that were not open last week. So you have a chance to go to places that were not available to visit this time last week. Shelter-in-place restrictions are being slowly lifted in parts of the region, meaning inevitably that people who were once apart are now able to get in closer proximity to one another. Health workers are keeping an eye on the situation, including Dr. Jim Shames, who's the medical director at Jackson County Health and Human Services. He's been joining us for weekly visits to answer my questions and yours for several weeks now, and welcome him back. Jim Shames, good to have you once again.
Thanks, Jeffrey. Glad to be back.
Let me put the number out there again, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So is anything different from your perspective? I mean, we've been talking about, what, basically two working days of businesses being open plus the weekend. Anything feel different, seem different, observably different for you at the Jackson County Health and Human Services Department?
Well, it does feel different. It seems like a lot of folks are taking advantage of the opening up. We see people out on the streets. I think some folks are throwing caution to the wind, and that's kind of disturbing. My concern is that 2, 3, 4 weeks from now, we may see an increase in cases as a result of that. So I would encourage everybody to continue to treat this virus with great respect and do the various social distancing that we've been recommending all along.
Now, I was going to ask you about the gestation period for the virus or the incubation period, because do we know that it is 2 weeks, 4 weeks, or is it any more exact than that? Because I was trying to do the math myself and think, okay, if reopening was around May 14th and about the 28th, we might start seeing some cases.
Well, the average incubation period is around 5 to 7 days, and it appears some people are a bit sooner, and certainly some people can shed the virus for much longer. But the other issue is that it takes a while for the numbers to build up. So, yes, it may very well be that we've spread a bit more of the virus starting now, but it may take quite a while before the that becomes evident, even more than just one incubation period, because 2 becomes 6, becomes 20, becomes 100, and then at some point it becomes pretty obvious that you're heading into trouble.
Well, we have heard discussion, not necessarily with you, but noticed the descriptions of virus loads, particularly on people like healthcare workers. Walk us through the concept there. I guess I'm wondering if you get exposed to one person, that might not be enough to get you sick, but if you get exposed to 2, 3, 4, et cetera, it might raise your chances.
I don't know if it's so much that as the fact that some people seem to be what are called super spreaders, that for whatever reasons they can infect a lot more people than others. It may have to do with just how much virus is living in them. How much virus expels from their mouths when they talk or laugh or cough. And then on the receiving end, it does appear that the volume of virus that gets into your body may affect how serious your disease is. That one's a little harder for me to figure, but there is some evidence to suggest that may be true.
All right, the human immune system being what it is, could you get some virus in your body and not get sick?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we know that there are people who can go through the entire course of illness, many people who have no evidence of being sick at all, or at least not that they're aware of.
So let's talk then about the symptoms, because it seems like this is something that continues to wander just a bit. We read about things like COVID toes and some of the other stuff that gets out there. So, are there things that are showing up as symptoms of COVID-19 that we didn't think were symptoms a few months ago?
Yeah, continuously. What's clear is that this virus can, either the virus itself or the immune response that it elicits, can attack pretty much all parts of the body, the cardiovascular system and the brain and the kidneys, as well as the clotting mechanism, so that people can have disseminated blood clots around the body. They can have strokes, heart attacks. Yeah, there's a lot of effects that we are beginning to understand. And then there's that Kawasaki's type syndrome that children can get that, you know, may be related again to the immune response that children create to the virus.
But that's an interesting point that we're talking about immune response. So it is, in some cases, an overreaction of the body's immune system that actually causes the damage rather than the virus itself?
Yeah. I think a lot of the problems that this virus elicits are, in fact, due to the immune response and the various ways the body overreacts. You know, in many cases, the virus can be undetectable in the body, and yet people are very, very sick.
Mm-hmm. Well, I noticed that when we talk about the comparisons to the last giganto pandemic, what we call the Spanish flu, for lack of a better term, it actually started in Kansas, I think, was the first case,
right?
1918 to 1920, cytokine storms were cited as a cause of death in people who were otherwise in reasonably good health and in the prime of life. I mean, this was what the body basically trying to kill a bug with a gigantic hammer or something?
Yeah. I mean, immunology is not my strong point. but essentially, you know, we have this defensive mechanism, and if it, you know, at its most extreme, it not only, you know, kills the bugs that are in us, but can actually, you know, do reverse damage to the body itself. So cytokine storm is a description of some of the natural defense substances that are released in the body that then do way more than just kill the virus, but they start doing damage to the organs of the body.
Yeah, forgive my bug and hammer metaphor. I realize all discussion is metaphor after a while. Jim Shames is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Dr. Jim Shames is Jackson County's chief medical officer from the Public Health Division at the County Health and Human Services Department. Available to take your questions about what's going on with COVID-19, 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Before we get too deep into the discussion, I want to catch up on where things are in Jackson County. You do have, what, one new case in the last couple of weeks now?
Yes.
All right. And was that a reallocated case? The more we hear about this, it seems like cases that get assigned to some counties and then people go, whoops, nope, they don't live there, they live there.
I think we went from 49 to 50 with a reallocated case, and I think we have a new case now that brings us up to 51.
All right. And how, now I don't have the figures on ever hospitalized in front of me. Last time I looked, it was under 10. Is that still the operative figure?
Gosh, I don't know that number. You mean ever hospitalized out of the 51?
Exactly.
That sounds about right, and that certainly would match the national statistics of 20% hospitalization rate, mm-hmm. And that would be pretty much exactly matching those statistics. So that sounds about right. I don't think we have anybody hospitalized currently.
All right. So are the hospitals taking on more non-COVID cases now? They were
right.
free to start taking on more elective surgeries and things like that recently. I just wonder
right.
what you're hearing, if anything, from the hospitals in Jackson County about their activities.
Well, the hospitals are being very cautious and responsible about gearing up. I mean, we certainly need to start, you know, doing those hip replacements and surgeries that people have been putting off. And they are trying really hard to make sure that as they do that, that we don't bring COVID into the hospital systems. And as I said, I think they're doing it very responsibly, and I think the public can be assured that they're safe to get these procedures done in our hospital environment.
And the hospitals have to have how much PPE on hand now? What's the requirement?
I think they have to have, it's either 2 to 4 weeks worth, but you know, I think we all recognize that you could burn through that pretty quickly. So not only are they trying to have adequate amounts of PPP on hand, but to assure they have, you know, multiple outlets either to clean their existing PPE or to make sure that if one supplier goes down, they have another way to get it.
All right. Does the County Health Department play any role in obtaining that or servicing it?
Yes. We have a cache of PPE that ultimately comes from the feds to the state to us, and we allocate that out. The majority of it goes to the hospitals and to the EMS providers, but there is a little bit extra that we have that, you know, we may need to utilize for various emergencies that, you know, public health has some responsibility for.
All right, let's take a call here. Boris in Eugene, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. Jim Shames from Jackson County Public Health. Boris, go ahead.
I hear that employers take the temperature of their workers to see whether they can come to work or not. Can I take the temperature of my friend, and if it's not elevated, not have to do social distancing?
All right, that's an interesting question. So some temperature checks, just as a way to say, okay, yeah, we can be together. What do you recommend there, Dr. Shames?
Yeah, that's a great question, Boris. And unfortunately, this disease, as we said earlier, can manifest in so many different ways that not everyone has the so-called classic presentation of fever, cough, shortness of breath, chest tightness. So not only can some people not have a fever and have the disease, but we're most infectious at the very early onset of the disease. So maybe you'll have a fever tomorrow, but today you don't, and yet today you're shedding virus like crazy. So I don't think any of us are off the hook. I think the social distancing and facial covering and hand washing should be routine for all of us, because we might be shedding virus and not know it.
All right, and it's generally, again, we're talking droplets here, so sneezes, coughs, even loud talking, singing for that matter, seems to be something that spreads some saliva through the air.
Breathing.
Breathing, okay. Just anything that involves breathing.
Yeah.
Another question here from Tom in Ashland is asking about police in police cars. In this case, Ashland PD, have not seen any of them in masks. Shouldn't they be wearing them, he writes. Sometimes there are two of them in one patrol car, obviously not social distancing. Even seen them making traffic stops and interacting with the public without masks on.
Well, it may be that there are certain circumstances with police out of doors, solo, staying distant from others, where technically they might not need a mask. But I think there's two reasons why the police should be wearing masks. One would be if you're in a patrol car with another person, definitely that's a risky situation. And if you're going to be interfacing with the public, getting, you know, close and personal with somebody in another car or some disturbance, then, you know, you're putting yourself at risk. And, again, you could be incubating the disease and not know it, putting other folks at risk. But the other important reason is I think that all of us who represent the public should be messaging through our behaviors, you know, what we want them to do. So I think the more that we don't show ourselves masking, the more you know, it's going to be harder to convince people that it's the right thing to do. And from a public health perspective, I think it's the right thing to do.
We've observed in previous discussions about how there seems to be a political split that has already formed here rather quickly, we would say, too. Where, you know, basically if you're on one side of the aisle, you're going to wear the mask, and if the other side, you're not. I mean, that it basically you're telling your politics through the wearing of a mask. This must be a tough zone for somebody in public health to try to navigate.
Yeah, I think it's extremely unfortunate, and fundamentally, I don't really completely understand it. The science is pretty clear, and I understand that some people don't respect science as much as I do, but the virus just doesn't care what political party you belong to or what your belief system is. It's going to transmit in the way it's going to transmit, and facial coverings, especially ones that are, you know, kind of designed to fit appropriately over your mouth and nose, work quite well to prevent the virus hitchhiking on your droplets that come out of your mouth as you breathe and talk from infecting others. It to me, it feels like a simple act of consideration that I might be infectious and I don't want you to catch my disease, so I'm going to wear a facial covering. It's really not that big a deal. And so I think we need to model that behavior and make a statement that I care about you and I care about your community.
I know we had a couple of people contact us asking about the face masks we talked about yesterday on the program, because we visited with some Rogue Valley manufacturers who have moved into the making of PPE during the pandemic. Mm. And Maskit.us is one of them. It's M-A-S-K-I-T .us. And just look for the disposable mask on there. And then also we had the folks in Bioskin on yesterday, and that's bioskin.com if you want to follow up on what we had on the exchange yesterday. We have an email here from Susan, no town given. She says, what can you tell us about the new case in Jackson County?
Nothing.
That's kind of what I figured. But so talk about what goes on, the HEPA rules. I mean, the healthcare, health, employment, privacy, and portability act.
Well, this is beyond HIPAA rules. Mm-hmm. This is just sort of basic public health, that we don't want to do anything to possibly identify any individual. And, you know, not only is it just, you know, being courteous of the individual, but public health is based upon trust. You know, we can't go out and identify a contact of a case of syphilis if they think that somehow we're going to reveal their identity, right? It all falls apart at that point. So we're quite scrupulous about not providing any specific identifiable information. We like to provide our information congregately so that you get a sense over time of sort of what age groups were involved, you know, perhaps generally where people were from. We're real careful about the zip code data. You know, it could be that you heard that somebody came off a cruise ship and they lived in some part of town. And you figure it out mm-hmm. by the public health data that we give. So we give very little, and we're not really trying to be secretive as much as we're just trying to be respectful.
Mm-hmm. But at some point, I mean, are there some guidelines for how to proceed if the public health benefit of revealing some information outweighs the needs for privacy?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, if, for example, there was a restaurant or some egregious situation where lots of people were exposed and we had to reveal either the identity of the person or the identity of the place to protect the public, we would do that. And when we do that sort of thing, we usually involve county council, and we give quite a bit of thought to how we're going to present it. But, you know, we don't hesitate. I mean, our job is to protect the public, and we're always balancing sort of the individual rights versus the public need.
A question here from Susan and Phil via email, no town given. The question is, when would you feel safe flying again, and what do airlines need to do?
I was told anecdotally that people are flying without wearing masks. I would think an airline should insist that any individual that gets into a closed cabin for hours sharing air with other people would have to be masked. I would hope that they would disperse the people around the plane so that their 6-foot distancing at least is maintained, that everybody's masked, that there's opportunities for hand washing, you know, et cetera, et cetera. That they would bend over backwards to try and accommodate the kinds of social distancing mechanisms that we need to stay safe. And I actually don't know enough to know if that's what they're doing or if that's what they're planning to do.
I know I've heard of some airlines that have put a mask requirement in place. Don't know that all of them have gotten there. What about just, you know, when you get on a plane? I know that, I've swabbed down the surfaces in front of me. It's nice to have the tray table and the armrests kind of cleaned up before you get in there.
Yeah. Well, I assume that the planes do that, and they're probably doing it aggressively. I've heard that. But I would probably take the added precaution that you said and, you know, make sure that my own personal space is safe.
Mm-hmm. We have talked in the past about the replication number for this or any disease. You know, it seems like it's, what, between maybe 2 and 3 with COVID-19?
Right.
All right. But, you know, in cases of stuff that's really easy to catch, like measles, it's up around 18. So one person can infect 18 others is the general math, I think, there. Now, I've noticed some discussion about the R-naught, the replication number, being different in different places. I mean, does it change with the circumstances?
It does. I don't know that the R-naught can come down. I mean, for example, the R-naught in Oregon is hovering around 1. And what that means is that the you aren't going to see any great increases or decreases of the overall extent of disease. And that's, in fact, what we are seeing, which is a plateau with perhaps a very gradual decrease. And the only way you're going to get a decrease is if the R-naught can drop below 1. So we're working on that. The reopening is going to make that difficult.
Right, indeed. Yeah. Well, we'll be seeing, as you pointed out, some people appear to be throwing caution to the wind in the early stages of the reopening, which is just, 4 days in progress as of this point. So more to talk about in the future, but that's all we have time for today. Dr. Jim Shames is the Medical Director at Jackson County Health and Human Services. Thanks for joining us once again on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Good to have you.